Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson. Here on the Hump Day edition of the Yard, a lot to talk about. We're going to talk about some football stuff, some baseball stuff, talk some music stuff, as we always do, which is kind of connected to our current baseball conversation over at jeanspage.com. You can come join the discussion over there. A lot of details, a lot of things have happened, and want to bring you up to speed on all of that today. The deadline is noon, August 1st. So we're just about 8 days out away from everything being official. Now, of course, guys have come to terms since then, so they don't need the full deadline. And so I'm going to kind of go over kind of who signed and what I've heard they've signed for, and then kind of what we're waiting on. Also picked up a new baseball commitment today for 2025. There's a football recruiting event in Starkville tomorrow. There will be no media available there, but we will do our best to catch up with guys throughout the weekend. Just kind of let you know what we found out. Most of the guys are commitments. You know, it's not like it's an official visit weekend. We're expecting a lot of fireworks. But all of that understood. It's great to be a Mississippi State Bulldog, and I am officially done with everything with the dude. Done all my part. Of course, there'll probably be a final read or something like that here in the next couple days, just to go back and make sure all the changes are in. But I can read it in a day, and maybe you will too. You know, it's just I don't know how fast you read or how much you can absorb. But there's a ton of details in this book, The Dude. If you hadn't pre-ordered, I encourage you to do so at dutynoblebook.com. Really excited about this one, as you guys can tell. And, people ask me, you know, what's next? Like, as soon as I get a book finished, people are like, hey, what are you working on next? And I appreciate the interest, but at this point, I have no clue. Like, this time last year, I had no clue I was going to be writing a biography of Dutee Noble. So you never know where the inspiration comes from. And I don't even know if we write a book next year. But I'll tell you this, if The Dude is the last book I ever write, it's probably the one I'm most proud of, truthfully. I think it's a great book. I think every Mississippi State fan should buy it. I think you're going to learn some things. You know, that's the thing. I say everybody should buy Dogpile, and you should. But, you know, we all kind of live through that. You got to hear some behind-the-scenes stuff, and you get to read about, the interviews and things like that. But there wasn't a ton of new information, I guess. Yeah, I interviewed John Cohen and Ron Polk and Chris Simonis, and, it was great. It chronicled a very important time in our university's history. This one is much different. There's going to be a lot in this one that you don't know. If you like Stark Villains and Alpha Dogs, and you must because they're nearly out of print now, you're going to love this one. And the truth of the matter is, I wish I could even go back. Now that I've written this one, I wish I could go back and kind of detail out Villains and Alpha Dogs. I'll share with you guys, too, one of the things that we're kicking around now, since those books are about to go out of print, is doing an ebook. So we'll do a fresh edit and do an ebook. And many of you have continued to encourage me to do Audible because you like to travel and listen to books on tape and things like that. And so even though we don't use tape anymore, but you understand the reference, that's something we're thinking about too. Maybe we do that after Christmas. I got the equipment here, and I think I've got the voice to it too. My wife has told me many times, you need to do these books on audio, on Audible, because of the fact that there's a lot of author commentary that you can add to these. And so even if you've read them, I think I may enjoy doing that. So we'll see. But it takes a lot of time and effort. And that really, it's not about effort, and it's not even about attitude. It's about finding time. And so we get through Christmas, and hopefully we're in a bowl game. And then I've got the month of January before we really get in big time with baseball because, you know, the December signing period falls very early, so there's not quite as much recruiting stuff. So this January may be a good time for me to kind of sit down and read those books and put them on Audible for you, at least Villains and Alpha Dogs. At least that's kind of what we're kicking around. So we're definitely going to do the ebook. Got to work through a fresh edit and things like that, and then we'll consider doing that. Many of you have asked for that for years. But that's kind of where we are in the thought process. But until that happens, you need to definitely order The Dude, The Life and Times of Dutee Noble. Going to be some amazing things you're going to learn. Some things that were kind of shocking to me. I learned more writing this book than anything I've ever worked on in my life. I used to say that about Stark Villains, but this, you know, kind of, you know, chronicles a much deeper and longer period of time in that respect. And listen, there's stories from eight decades in both Villains and Alpha Dogs, but this is much, much different, you know. Written in a little different format, too. So be sure and check it out. I'm so excited for you guys to have it. Not just on your bookshelves, but I'm ready for you to absorb that knowledge and kind of understand from where we've come as an athletics department and as a university. Some names out there, too, that maybe you're somewhat familiar with, you're going to read about, and you're going to think, you know what, this guy was outstanding. This guy did a great job for Mississippi State. True. All right. Let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company, longtime sponsors of this show. I love Bulldog Burger Company, and I am kind of getting a hankering, you know what I mean? Sometimes I have an itch that only Bulldog Burger Company can scratch because they just simply have the best restaurant quality hamburgers around. And sometimes, especially, you know, you sit around all day and you kind of nibble and graze and things like that. Sometimes you got to have that big portion of protein. You do. And you're going to get it at Bulldog Burger Company. Great portions, great price, great atmosphere. You can get it to go. Get it home. It won't be all yucky and gross like you get with some other places. It's outstanding quality of service in-house and takeout. Outstanding. Three great locations to serve you: University Drive in Stark Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Be sure and get the spring rolls as your appetizer. And maybe if you want to change it up a little bit, maybe you're beautiful enough today. Today, many of you ladies are, you dudes, don't skip on the spring rolls. But maybe you want to change it up. Get those chicken wings. You'll be kind of surprised, I think, that a burger joint can do wings that well. And get that chocolate shake to go. Make the whole thing an experience. You're not just popping in for lunch. You're putting your feet under their table for a great dining experience. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. All right, let's take some time and talk about some Mississippi State Major League Baseball signings. Some of you guys aren't on social media, and some of you just don't know where to look, and you know, maybe you just don't think to keep up with it, right? You just get on and scroll, right? So, Gerangelo Sanchez, our friend, signed for full slot with the Seattle Mariners, setting a new Mississippi State signing bonus record of $4.88 million. There's some change with that too, you know. So nearly $4.9 million for Gerangelo. One thing that he told me back, I guess, during the regionals maybe, but he said, hey, I want to get settled, you know, like a year, and I want to bring the rest of my family over to the United States. That kind of changes the context things, doesn't it? It does. Cal Stevens, second rounder to the Blue Jays. He signs for just over $1.12 million. What's interesting, too, and I brought this up before, but this is, again, another situation here. Like, okay, Cal Stephen, again, committed to us on July 31st. After the Luke Holman sweepstakes ended and he picked LSU, we get Cal Stephen. Cal Stephen had a great year, got drafted before Luke Holman, and signed for more money than Luke Holman. And that's really the piece to me. If I'm sitting down, if I'm Chris Lemonis and Justin Parker, I'm not just talking about development. Hey, you want to get to the big leagues, right, kid? Well, here's what we did, okay? Luke Holman was the guy that everybody said was the best arm in the portal, and we took a guy that many people considered a plan B, who was an above-average pitcher in the Big Ten. He was a 59th player selected in the 2024 draft, signed for more money, got drafted higher, and was a multi-publication All-American. That is an easy sell, if you ask me. All right, our buddy Nate Dome, we love Nate. Nate the Great. I think Nate has a chance to get to the pros, too, pretty quickly, to the show. Signed for $800,000. You'll see a variance of about $2,500. I think I've shared that with you guys before. It's just kind of a processing thing. But he signs for $800,000. Slot value was $934 and change. Nate's now in the house now. Very, very happy for Nate. And I can only begin to imagine, again, what would his draft stock look like without the injury? And what would our season have looked like without the injury? Is Nate the guy that could have played his way into the first round? We'll never know. But now he's got an opportunity now to go make some big things happen for himself. And I think one of the things, too, and I had this discussion earlier, you know, we don't get Cal Steven without Nate. And so it's not just what Nate contributed to us on the mound, being a good teammate, being an 80-grade teammate, you know, being a great guy in the clubhouse, a relentless worker. It's not just that. It's not just that Nate came here to get better. He came here to make Mississippi State better. Not only with his contributions as a player, but also as a recruiter. And again, you mentioned, you know, Cal Steven, those guys are friends. Played on Team Indiana together. So really happy for him. Now, Dakota Jordan, unless this news breaks during the show, his slot value is $624 and change. He's going to sign for around $2 million. And I understand they've already agreed, maybe just hadn't facilitated the contract, but he's out in San Francisco. Now, he's out wherever they are, wherever they want him. He's already gone. You know, go out there and you take the pictures and all that kind of stuff. You do your physical. But, yeah, not unless it's been released while I'm recording, Dakota Jordan going to get about $2 million. So, basically, second-round money. So, while he goes in the fourth, they get some savings on Tibbs in the first because he's an older guy. They pay him under slot. They get some senior savers. So, they kind of pool their money together to make this thing happen with DJ. But, yeah, so when the numbers come out, it's going to be about $2 million. Brooks Auger, our friend. Man, we love Brooks. I go back and I think about this whole thing with Brooks, too. Like, you know, Brooks came here as a freshman from Hines. And then all of a sudden, he becomes you know, one of the best guys out of bullpen, you know, like in 22. And, you know, that was a difficult year for us. As you guys know, we had a ton of injuries, and he ended up being one of them. Brooks could have come back in 2023. Could have, late, but they make the decision, no, we're not going to do that. We're not going to waste a year of his eligibility on a partial season. He inks a six-round deal with the Los Angeles Dodgers of $197,500. So, again, ramp up your $2,500, so he signs for $200,000, which is $115,000 below slot. But really happy for Brooks. Traded some messages with him earlier today. Super excited for him. And who could ever forget that incredible, legendary pitching performance in Hoover against Ole Miss? Phenomenal, Ben Howland says. All right, Colby Holcomb, we've talked about him. He gets a $200,000 deal, a little bit over slot from the Blue Jays. And it's so interesting. Mr. Facebook baseball expert tried to argue with me when I put up my draft preview that Colby Holcomb would likely get drafted. He goes, oh, he's not getting drafted. Well, not only did he get drafted there, Chief, he gets paid over slot in the ninth round, not the 19th or 20th, the ninth round. And good for him. Good for Colby, not old John Q. Facebook baseball expert. Tyson Harden taken in the 12th round. Of course, he's a senior, not a lot of bargaining power there. I'm told he is going to sign for right at $150,000, which is pretty incredible, right, considering he has no leverage. But I'm told it's going to be $150,000. I had somebody else tell me it may not be quite as much. But, yeah, he's going to get six figures to sign. And has there been a greater story of redemption of a Bulldog pitcher than Tyson Harden, at least in recent memory? I would say no. Probably the closest thing is Chad Jurado. Really, really happy for Tyson. If you guys were ever around him, you'd have the opportunity to kind of see what a great young man he is, what a great job his family did raising him. And again, some other people thought he may not get drafted. But when you look at the year he had, you begin to think, man, what if he had Justin Parker for 2 years? It's crazy, man. Connor Hyzak, he signs for $150,000 with the Tampa Bay Rays. That's great, right? That's a 13th round pick getting his full, it's not necessarily a slot value, but for his spot, he gets $150,000 because he's a good player. He would never have agreed to be. You know, of course, you think, well, you know, Steve, I mean, you know, they take what they get. You know, sometimes you're bidding against yourself. But if you're a guy like Connor Hyzak, who got multiple calls from multiple teams, you kind of tell people, it's like, hey, here's what I'm looking for. If I'm getting drafted this late, I got to get full 150. And there's probably multiple teams out there that's like, hey, we'll do that, but we're not going to take you here. Well, then you can leverage that. You've got an agent that handles that stuff for you. But 150K. In the 15th round, Tyler Davis, another guy that was a senior with no leverage, he gets $100,000. So excited for him. Excited for him to get the opportunity. And then Cam Schulke, in the 19th round, is going to sign for $55,000. And a lot of people are like, but Steve, couldn't we make that up in the NIL money? We absolutely could. But many of these guys, especially juniors, are ready to begin their pro careers. If Cam Schulke comes back as a senior and has the same year he has this year, he's probably signing for $1,000 next year. You can't run the risk. You can't say, hey, well, Connor Hyzak, you can't run the risk. I mean, we talked about the Angels draft, and we're about to get into some of that a little bit more. You know, their 8th, 9th, and 10th picks got $1,000. So Cam's got to think, okay, I can go ahead and get started now. And I understand, too, from sources close to Cam, they've also agreed to pay for his last year of college when that time comes. So it's a great deal for him. He begins his pro career. Gets about 50 G in the bank. And getting the minors. So now everybody wonders, okay, well, Steve, that's 10 of 11. What is David Mershon? You ever Googled yourself? You may be alarmed to know exactly how much of your private information and data is out there for anybody to access. Whether it be your phone number, your home address, or details about your family, it could be your kids' names, their ages. Whether you agree to this disclosure or not, and that's because data brokers are collecting and selling your information to marketers, scammers, and basically anyone willing to pay. It's the reason robocallers know your name, and while ads seem to follow you on every digital platform out there. Well, Aura fights back for you. They remove your personal data from broker sites and keep it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a data breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just data broker removal. It's a full digital security suite that protects every part of your life online. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager to keep all your logins safe, and they even give you spam call protection to cut off those stupid scammers. Aura also scans the dark web regularly for your most sensitive information, like your social security number, bank logins, passwords, and they will notify you instantly if you are somehow exposed. If your identity is ever stolen, you're backed up by up to $5 million in insurance and 24/7 U.S.-based fraud support to help you recover everything quickly. Other services charge about the same, but they only cover one or two areas. With Aura, you get it all. Data broker removal, credit and identity monitoring, device protection, and fraud support, all with one simple app. Aura removes what is already exposed, protects what isn't, and puts you back in control. Right now, you can try Aura free for 14 days when you visit aura.com/remove. That gives them plenty of time to go ahead and start protecting your data. They can remove your personal information from data broker sites. Sign up today at aura.com/remove and get the peace of mind that your privacy, identity, and finances are all safeguarded. That's Aura, aura.com/remove. Certain terms and conditions apply. Be sure and check it out today at aura.com. What am I going to do? Well, we began this process not exactly sure of how things were going to work out with the Angels draft. Now things have kind of come into focus for us a little bit. So let's go through the details. I've been tracking this stuff really closely, and I give the guys at the Angels Win Forum a lot of credit again for their template that is out there. It is not always up to speed. Sometimes it takes them a little while to update, and things get out there on social before they update. But what I'm learning is that the day three picks ahead of David Mershon are expected to sign for $150,000. So they won't come out of the bonus pool. They'll have some bonus pool money left. Now, big news last night. You know, we yesterday we had the Trey Gregory offered signing. Yeah, he's 1.957. That's 1.807500 from the bonus pool, which drops their bonus pool allowance down to 1.254 million and some change. So Fulton Lockhart is now being listed as a $150,000 signee. I thought he may go a little bit over slot. He didn't. Anything helps, right? Nodger Victor, also from Central Florida College, expected to sign his deal for $150,000. Same thing for Will Gervais. So what we're watching here is Ryan Prager, a draft-eligible sophomore for Texas A&M. Now, you guys know we've talked about this extensively over the course of the last several weeks. If they're drafted in the top 10 rounds, they've already pretty much come to terms on a signing bonus, for the most part. Now, there are a lot of agents out there that will say, yeah, well, that range is good for us, we'll sign. But then they hold their feet to the fire. Now, Prager, his slot value is $948,600. In the event that he goes for slot, that would leave, you know, about $250,000 and some change left for them to overpay Dave Merchant. If they can get him $400,000, I believe he probably signs. I think that's probably the case. So what we're rooting for here, if you want Dave Merchant to return, of course, we want what's best for Dave Merchant, but our interests are a little more selfish. Let's just be honest about that. You know, our allegiance is to Mississippi State. So what you really want is Ryan Prager to go for over slot. That's what you want. Now, there's $1.2 million left, and if I'm Ryan Prager's agent, I'm telling him I want the full $1.2. I want it all. And so the more Prager gets over slot, the less than they can offer Dave Merchant. Now, I also learned, too, Connor Gatwood's a guy that we talked about from Baker High School, headed to Auburn, grew up an Auburn fan. If they can't come to terms on Prager, well, then I suspect they throw all that money at Connor Gatewood and Dave Merchant. But Gatewood obviously is a guy, top 100 player, according to some, that'll command a much bigger price tag. So while things have gone favorably with the Angels draft the last 24 hours for a Mississippi State rooting perspective, we are not out of the woods yet. And I know some people out there ready to exhale. We're not going to be able to exhale, I don't think, until Ryan Prager's deal comes and goes. Once Prager is signed, then you know exactly what they can offer Merchant. And there's talk, of course, Merchant is going to meet with the Angels tomorrow, I believe. And they'll have a deal at that point, which makes me feel like we're going to get news on Prager before you and I get together again. So that's what you're watching. You're not necessarily watching Nodger Victor or Will Gervais, because, again, I think both of those guys are going to go for $150,000. If they go above that, then that's great too. But I don't expect that to be the case. So what you're watching is Ryan Prager from A&M. You really want him to go over slot. And they've proven that they are willing to go over slot for some guys too. You know, that they've done that. You know, Ryan Johnson, of course. One of the things we were watching, he was a compensation pick in the second round. You know, he goes $687,000 over slot. Dylan Jordan, high school player, ranked in the top 150, he goes $766,000 over slot. And, of course, Trey Gregory offered $1.8 million over slot. Everybody else has gone under slot. And so they've been able to get some savings, but it's tight. It is. And so I can't tell you right now what Dave Merchant's going to do, because I don't know. I don't think at this point Dave knows what he's going to do. And I think, hey, if he can get $400,000, I suspect he signs, because I don't know that he could expect that much more next year, right? Probably be a mid-round pick somewhere on day two and probably get, you know. So do you come back for another $100,000? You know, I don't know. So I don't think that we know enough yet to make any decisions. But I want you to be apprised of kind of what we're waiting on. A lot of people think, oh, well, they started out with $13 million. They'll definitely sign him. You know, you can't make that prediction. You can share your opinion, but there's just not enough data to support that even now. So we're watching Ryan Prager very, very closely. Now, we get over to the Milwaukee Brewers side of things, and this is where Travis Smith comes into play. Now, Milwaukee's situation's a little bit different, and different but the same, right? So when you work through this deal, you know, they have made some savings, but what's interesting is you start looking through this deal with the Brewers, they still got some high-priced guys left to sign. Now, they signed Blake Burke last night and saved some money doing that out of Tennessee. He was a competitive balance pick following the first round, so in between the first and second, so technically a first-rounder. But he signed for less than slot. But there are two high school pitchers you really got to watch. Bryce McCage from the Pennington School in New Jersey, slot value of 1.56, and then Chris Lavonis of Christian Brothers Academy in New Jersey, slot value of 1.23. Now, the chatter out there is both of these guys are expected to get paid over slot. I don't know what remains in the Brewers bonus pool, but if they have to pay those guys over slot, then I think Travis Smith comes to school. If they're able to get somebody under slot, let's say they get Blake to go for 1.3 and get Lavonis to go for $1 million, they may find a way to make that deal work with Travis Smith. But that's what you're watching. And the thing that I am so proud of from so many of you is I see on social media you educating others. You know, it's like you hear things on the show, and you're on Facebook or Twitter, and it's like, hey, well, here's what we're watching, or here's what's happened yesterday. You know, there are a lot of people out there, again, that love baseball that don't know a lot about the business of baseball. And this has been an educational summer for me, too. I got some friends that are MLB scouts, and I was like, hey, tell me what to expect here. What should I be watching, right? What should I expect? You know, you guys know these players, you know, the same way that I may know an in-state football recruit. You know, tell me how it plays out. You know, what's an asking price? What are you hearing out there? What should I expect them to sign for? And I've been able to share that information with you all. And so, yeah, a lot of talk out there about Dave Marchand, but we just don't know yet. And you know, it's, again, we did the waiting list on Monday. Waiting's the hardest part because we want to get excited about baseball. Now, the 2025 season will be here before you know it. And what's interesting about that, too, Baseball America came out with their too early top 25. Your Bulldogs ranked 16th. Now, of course, when we got in the car to come home from Charlottesville, Virginia, the big discussion was, what in the world does this roster look like next year? You know, you lose all your weekend starters. What does this roster look like? And then we've gone into the portal and, you know, still working through some things there. We're not going to sign a player just to sign a player. But we've done really well in the portal. Last time I checked, we were fifth in the country in the portal recruiting rankings for whatever that's worth, okay? And again, those guys doing the best job they can. It's a new thing. It is. It's new. And so it'll only get better, but they've tweaked it a little bit. So we're fifth in the country. And to read some of the commentary from some of our fans, you would think we didn't sign anybody. You know, that we're just going to go out there and pull kids out of the stands, play a baseball game. We have brought in some really good players. And if you're able to get Marchand and Travis Smith, I think you got a chance to be a top 10 team in the country in the preseason. And certainly, I think you got a chance, even if you open up in the teens, you got a chance to play your way in the top 10 before we get an SEC play. And that's how significant this summer has been. And we've discussed it ad nauseum on this show and on our message boards that really the value or really the expectation for the 2025 team will be determined on what happens this summer. And again, you think about how crazy all of this has been. You know, as soon as we get back from Virginia, we're hosting portal visitors. As soon as we get back, then you're working through the draft, and you know you're trying to give feedback to teams, try to help them make a good determination on your player. And we had a very successful draft. I mean, Cam Schulke got drafted. We weren't expecting that, and of course now Cam's signing, and you know we wish him the best, man. But huge Cam Schulke fan. Great, great young man. In addition to all that, the portal and The draft kind of go hand in hand because you may have some guys that are in the portal that commit somewhere else to get drafted. That happened to us a couple years ago. Now, also in addition to that, you got to go out and, you know, recruit your signing class to campus. Had several guys turn down deals. And then, before you know it, man, you got 2026 kids that can commit. And we've already got a couple 2026 kids, but, that was before the rules changed. But picked up a 2025 commitment today. A guy also, too, that referenced Nate Dohm in his interview. And we had an exclusive interview with Parker. Great young man. You kind of get the sense talking to some of these young people. You know, some of them you can tell maybe aren't exactly sure how to represent themselves. And there are others, of course, that you can tell are pretty polished. Parker Rhodes is one of those guys. Now, Parker Rhodes was a former commitment to Xavier. Told me that back, beginning of summer ball, he thought, you know what, I committed really early. And maybe I owe it to myself to see what else is out there. And I feel like Xavier certainly would take him back. This is a guy, 6'1", 175 pounds. He's a junior in high school, going to be rising to be a senior this year. Throwing 95 with a spin rate of 2,700. So he's a bit of a draft risk. The size, of course, it will be an issue. Will he be willing to take a deal or not? But, he said he came down. He's from Greenfield, Indiana. Said he played on the same summer league team. Not at the same time, but with the same organization as Nate Dohm. And he saw what Mississippi State did with Nate Dohm and what they did for Nate Dohm. And so he's like, you know what? This is a good place for me. And Indiana's kind of an under-recruited baseball state. And so, Kentucky gets in there some. Louisville gets in there some. With our connections to Indiana, it makes sense we go in there and get a couple guys, too. The Hoosiers have kind of had the run of the state. Indiana State, of course, has risen to prominence in recent years, too, as a very, very solid bit of major program. But perhaps there's an opportunity for us to kind of get a pipeline going up there when you look at what Cal Stephen and Nate Dohm have done here. And again, Lamontas, of course, ties to Indiana. Parker, Cheesebro, ties to Indiana. So happy to have him as part of our class. Eager to kind of see where things go. I'm eager to see what happens at, in the next couple weeks, too, because of the fact that you've got so many people out there that may be connected to you in some way. Apologize for that little burble there. We had a little bit of technical difficulty. But, you may have the Mississippi State kid that's out there that's always dreamed to play at Mississippi State. May go ahead and just commit soon and get it over with, right? And it's so interesting, too, some new changes. The NCAA committee now has approved 34 scholarships, 34 roster spots. And so you're going, the rosters are going to shrink, but you're going to be able to add more players to your scholarship role. So you're going to have the ability to put everybody on full scholarship, or you can just kind of spread it around. You can learn more about that. Kendall Rogers wrote a very detailed article about that. But it's going to be different. It's going to be a lot different. And I think in some respects, too, I think the junior college just kind of get a bone thrown here, too, because there's going to be thousands of less Division I baseball opportunities out there. And some guys I think that may be borderline guys may elect to go to junior college. And then, of course, that makes them draft eligible after a couple of years. But in addition, too, kind of gives them a chance to season and prove themselves a little bit. But I think, you're not going to take a chance on a guy, with less roster spots. That's an incredible thing to think about, right? I mean, there's just so much that goes into roster management for baseball. It's really unlike, football, right? Because you have so many walk-ons there. But it's a changing time within our existence, with all these new scholarships and things of that nature. And I have been a big proponent for many years to fully fund baseball for schools that can. They should be allowed to. And I had multiple people hit me up and say, Steve, I agree with you. You ought to have a sport of preference, right? If you're a hockey school, you should be able to fully fund hockey. And maybe you don't even play baseball. And if you're a baseball school and you don't play hockey, you should have the opportunity to fully fund that. I've often said we need divisions in baseball. We have them in football. We need them in baseball. Because LSU and Arkansas, Mississippi State and Florida State, Florida, those schools shouldn't be hindered, you know, from Monmouth, you know, or USC El Segundo or anybody like that. Those schools shouldn't be able to vote against something that helps the bigger schools just because they don't want to fully fund baseball. That's my feelings on it. You may disagree, but that's how I feel. All right, time for today's top 10 list is always brought to you by closewithblair.com. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R.com. Blair is my friend, your friend, our collective friend in the mortgage industry. And you may say, you know, Steve, I didn't know I had a friend in the mortgage industry. Well, allow me to introduce you. And Blair has updated his contact picture. Kind of freaks me out a little bit. 601-500-2344. Again, 601-500-2344. He's a friend maybe you hadn't met yet because you hadn't had a need yet. You hadn't looked into that game day condo, which could be more affordable than you think. You hadn't looked into buying a house for the first time. Maybe you've been on the hamster wheel of renting and just said, you know what, I just don't even know how to go about this. Well, Blair can take you through it. You may be a great risk as a mortgage borrower and you don't even know it. You just said, yeah, Steve, I just don't know how to go about this. You got to get a down payment. Well, you know, talk to Blair about that. There's some programs out there that may be able to assist you making the dream of home ownership become a reality. Blair is one of us, season ticket holder in multiple sports, has a place here in town. Guy knows how to get things done. 23 years of experience. He can be your advocate with underwriting. Whenever there is a pend, which is what they call it, they got a question about a loan, more times than not, he already has the answer. He may have to get you on the phone and say, hey, we need a little clarification here. But you can rest assured that he is going to construct your loan in a way that gives it the best chance to be approved. And get that pre-approval letter before you even go shop for a house. You don't want to go buy something beyond your means and move in a house and be stressed all the time. There's enough stress in life. Take the stress out of mortgage, lending, and purchase home buying, dealing with Close with Blair. All right, so we spent so much time talking about angels. I thought, well, let's just make a top 10 list out of that. You know, and again, I've got some of your ideas I got to get back to, but I just thought, you know what, hey, we have spent so much time here, you know, last couple weeks, look at what's the California Angels or the Los Angeles Angels, as somebody corrected me. Steve, they hadn't been the California Angels in 28 years. Well, thank you. Thank you for that. I get it. They'll always be the California Angels to me, no matter where they move, whether it be in Anaheim or L.A. or, you know, Bakersfield. Makes no difference to me. But the Angels have been in the forefront of our discussions. And if you go, like, you go to our baseball board at Gene's page, I mean, we've got some fans that have kind of become angel draft experts. You know, I love it, man. I love it. So here are top 10 songs about angels. Angels. I probably could have put a top 20 together about this. And it's a very diverse list. Now, one that didn't make it is Angel of the Morning by Juice Newton. Didn't make it. But I wanted to give a shout out to Juice, because I know many of you loved that song many years ago. We had it on 8-track. My dad sold Monte Carlo. Midnight Blue Monte Carlo with an 8-track. All right, number 10. And this is a song that you can't sing too loud when your significant other is in the vehicle with you. Because even if you're just enjoying the song and you're just singing along, having a good time, there are some people out there that say, well, is this a split-level communication directive here? Are you trying to tell me something without telling me something? Because when you crank up Hender's Lips of an Angel, you need to think about what you're doing. Especially if your relationship may be on the rocks a little bit, maybe things have been a little bit tenuous, don't put this song on and sing it with them in the car. Maybe you do it privately. I'm not telling you how to live your life. I'm just trying to help you avoid an argument here. So, and if you do sing it, kind of sing it under your breath. Don't get out there, that whole part about you make it hard to be faithful. Don't get out there and belt that thing out, man. I'm just telling you. Voice of experience. Number 9. I know many of you guys like this band. Some of you don't like this band. They got overplayed, to be fair. They're very talented, but they got overplayed. We're talking Train, and it's Calling All Angels. Great track. Great track. I'll tell you another one that didn't make it was Angel of Harlem from U2. That didn't make it either. But Yeah, Train, it seemed like Train came out of nowhere, pardon the pun, and the next thing you know, it's like every time you turned around, you know, Train was at the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. They were on American Bandstand. They were on Good Morning America. It's like they were everywhere. They got overexposed and overplayed, and people are like, okay, enough of this. But great band, for sure. Number eight, a lot of you right now, there's some Southern rock fans that were thinking, you know what, I wonder if this song made the list, and it did. It did. You thought maybe Steve would have forgotten, but Steve rarely forgets. Rarely. It's Greg Allman's I'm No Angel. And we're hoping that's what Dave Marchand is saying here about a week, right? I think we'll know before then. But yeah, Greg's great, man. And I remember where I was. I was in Tulsa, Oklahoma at the Hard Rock. And if you ever get a chance to stay there, you should. I love that place. I love being able to go out there and just kind of get away. It's true. But I woke up one morning at the Hard Rock, and Greg had passed away. And within hours, they already had like a little display up there at the Hard Rock. Yeah, super cool. But Greg Allman's I'm No Angel. They even had a rock video for this. Number seven, our most listened to top 10 list of all time. And it makes me think that maybe I was wrong, but I was mistaken. It's Poison. Poison is the most listened to top 10 list we've ever had. Now, I wasn't a big Poison fan. I've met Bret Michaels, had a chance to visit with him. Super nice guy. But CC DeVille can't play guitar. And I know that that is difficult for many of you to accept. He had the big hair, the ridiculously big blonde teased up look. But he fit what they wanted from an image standpoint. If you go pick up a guitar at a pawn shop right now, you don't even have to tune it, and you could probably play along to I Won't Forget You, Baby. You probably could. But, again, I think Poison was great for what they did, and I think Nothing But a Good Time is phenomenal. I think it's one of the best songs of the 80s. But from a technical musicianship standpoint, they just were not on par with many of the other bands of the era. And, again, maybe that you don't care about that. You're just like, Steve, I just like a good song. Well, here's a great one, one of my favorite Poison songs of all times. It's Fallen Angel. Love the song. Love the video. Super cool. Super, super cool. And then, Brett has that Harley, the Hollywood Taxi, whatever it is. Great, great track. Number six, going back to the Permanent Vacation album from Aerosmith. I recently saw an interview that Steven Tyler did about recovery. And they asked him, I said, what? He goes, well, when I drink, I ended up getting kicked out of my band and I get a divorce. My kids don't talk to me. He goes, it's just not worth it. It's not worth it. That's how I feel too. It's like people say, hey, Steve, I can't believe that you can't drink. I can drink. I just don't drink. Much different story because I know what's going to happen. I know. Even though it's been over 30 years since I have been inebriated or high, I know how those stories tend to go. And at some point, it may be the lost weekend and you go out there and you have this epic weekend. I would rather remember all my memories, even the stuff that I do that may be a little bit, wild. I would rather be able to recall those memories and not have somebody else recount them to me. Big Aerosmith guy here. And we're going to go with Angel, obviously. Great video for that, too. Huge hit. I guess Dude Looks Like a Lady was the first single off that album, and then they came back with Angel, which was in the power band era. But I've been told that Steve Tyler really doesn't like to perform this song live. Number five, most of you know this. I guess it's, what's the ASPCA thing? I think that's right. But it's Sarah McLachlan's Angel is number five. I am a huge Sarah McLachlan fan. I haven't listened to her more recent stuff. But there was a time in my life, man, that that Fumbling Towards Ecstasy album is incredible. From start to finish, absolutely love it. Love her. Absolutely love her. Beautiful, beautiful voice. And as beautiful as she is as a person, she's even a beautiful, more beautiful performer. Love her art, for sure. All right, number four on our list. We're getting a little closer to home here. And there's some old timers that thought, surely he won't put, no, he did. He did. It's Charlie Pride's Kissin' Angel Good Morning. What an incredible voice. An absolutely incredible, incredible voice. It reminds me of just growing up, man. I mean, growing up in Mississippi. My dad, again, Charlie Pride 8-tracks. But Charlie, what's an incredible performer. You know, it's just like you put it on today and it just holds up. It's not dated. Now, you don't have the instrumentation you have today, but when you think about country western music, man, you think about Charlie Pride. Proud to call him one of our own. Charlie Pride's Kissin' an Angel Good Morning. He says that's a secret to living. Maybe it is. Sticking with some country stuff, one of the great duets of my lifetime from probably two people that you wouldn't expect. It's Willie Nelson and Ray Charles with Seven Spanish Angels. Very emotional song, too. You go back and read the lyrics, and you can hear the authenticity in the vocal presentation from these two gentlemen. And an absolutely incredible song. If you don't know it, put it on. Seven Spanish Angels from Willie Nelson and Ray Charles. All right, we got to rock our way out of this thing. A lot of country today. A lot of pop music today. A little alternative. some stereotypical hair metal. But let's go number two. One of the greatest rock bands in the world, and they have been for a long time, it's the Scorpions, Send Me an Angel. Love this one. Klaus Meine, I think, is an underappreciated vocalist. If you don't know much of the Scorpions catalog outside of, Wind of Change and Rock You Like a Hurricane, let me encourage you to dig in a little bit deeper. This is a great, great track. There's actually an unplugged version of this. It's available on YouTube. It may be available on Apple Music. I haven't looked. But there is an acoustic version of this. And then there is another version of this where they played with the symphony. I like them all. But it's Send Me an Angel, Scorpions, number two. But number one, and you probably know exactly where we're going here. It's the Black Crowes. She Talks to Angels. They call her out by her name. You loved it the first time you heard it. You said, you know what, maybe I've heard this song before, and it's not really that. It's just a sentiment behind it. It's one of those songs from the very first time that you kind of get involved in it. You're like, there's something here. This person has lived through this. There is some real authenticity in what he is trying to convey in this incredible song. And I love it. I think Chris Robinson is a legendary performer. I don't know that he gets enough respect. As big as he is, I still think there's some people. And a lot of it's political. Chris is a guy that's kind of out there. But there's no denying his talent and his cool. I absolutely love the Black Crowes. And that Shake Your Moneymaker album. When I bought that thing for the first time, I felt like, you know what? Things are kind of changing for me. I was a guy coming off the hair metal of the 80s and surviving the 90s dance scene. And the next thing I know, I've got a copy of Shake Your Moneymaker. I'm like, you know what? This may be the next wave in music here. Incredible. Incredible. Hey, guys, if you have ideas for the top 10 list, please reach out and let us know. Find me on all forms of social media at Scout Steve R. And hit Roy up with your ideas at Dogmatic67, DAWGMATIC67. And find our great list on Spotify under that same handle. And thanks, as always, for your support of the top 10. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. I love Campus Bookmart. Chances are you do too. And if you don't, it's because you hadn't shopped there yet, because you'll be addicted once you do. So many incredible things in there that can just, outfit your home, your office, your RV, your automobile, your fan cave, whatever you'd like to decorate, they've got it for you. And it's always time to get some fresh Mississippi State gear. Got a new football season coming up. You don't want to come out there with three-year-old threads. Buy yourself some new game day apparel from Campus Bookmart. Now, if you can't make it to town, we encourage you to visit them on the World Wide Web at campusbookmart.net. And by being a loyal Boneyard listener, we'll give you a phrase that pays. That is BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than 75 bones, absolutely incomplete. I need to get in there too. I do. I got some birthdays coming up. I got to buy some gear for some Bulldogs that I know and love. And whether you're looking for a birthday gift, a graduation gift, a housewarming gift, wedding gift, Whatever you're looking for Mississippi State related, you can find it at Campus Bookmark. All right, our opponent previews. And again, we'll circle back to these, obviously game week. But Arizona State, are you excited about this, kids? Are you excited about a trip to Tempe? I am. Got to buy a plane ticket soon. You got to be sure and check that out. I mean, again, when's the next time we're going to go to Tempe? You know, with the way things are changing, you never know. You know, you just never know. Now, one thing I want to point out to you, too, and I kind of got caught up in some of this stuff myself, is there is still a lot of, shall we say, conversation left to be had about the 9-game SEC schedule. You know, a lot of this, too, you know, of course, with the Pac-12 kind of becoming a different deal and, you know, different conference realignments, a lot of these cancellations have been a byproduct of that. I'm told they still don't have the votes to get the 9. And it's not going to happen this year. It's certainly not going to happen next year. And so it's something they will continue to discuss, but don't just automatically assume that's going to be the case just because you see some cancellation. Yeah, that things are going to change, but that may not be one of them, at least not in the foreseeable future. All right, the Sun Devils, and I'm looking forward to getting out there. Of course, I went out there for the game against Arizona. You know, been to Tucson. Now we'll go to Tempe. Tough year for first-year coach Kenny Dillingham. We'll talk about him a little bit more shortly. But last year was tough, man. And you had to kind of feel like, hey, when we narrowly escape with a 3-point victory over Southern Utah, even though we're a first-year coach, even though we've had a bunch of changes, we might be in trouble. That should have been a hint and a half for you right there that it wasn't going to be a great year of football at Arizona State. The next week, however, they host Oklahoma State, who had a pretty good club last year, and it's a 27-15 game. But, you know, hey, it's not a blowout. Well, that came the next week. Fresno State marched into Tempe and won 29-0. They bounced back. And it's crazy, too. They opened the season with 4 straight home games and 2 of those big-time opponents. You get USC to come in, and it's a 42-28 game. Somewhat competitive, but you didn't win. So you look up now, and you're 1-3. With Deion Sanders, excuse me, you're going to Cal first. And they go to Cal, and they nearly pull it off out there. Not that Cal was great last year, but they lose 24-21. The next week, Deion and the Buffs come in, and they win by 3, 27-24. The next week, they go to Washington and lose 15-7. So you see, you know, down the stretch here, they were a lot more competitive for the most part. The pain train's coming, though. They host Washington State at their place, and they win 38-27. And then they go to Utah and take on the Fighting Utes and get beat 55-3. Brutal. They bounce back and win at UCLA 17-7. Not that UCLA was great last year. Pac-12 is pretty bad all the way around. Outside of Oregon, I guess, Washington. But as a league, they weren't very strong. And then Oregon gets them 49-13. And then the rivalry game, Arizona, in Tempe, and the Wildcats go in there in Jed Fish's last game there and knock them off 59-23. So it is a 3-9 year, 2-7 in the conference, 2-6 at home. But it's foundation year, right? It's year number one. And we mentioned it was the first year under Kenny Dillingham, one of the youngest coaches in Division I football, just 34 years of age. Guys, he was born about 5 weeks before I graduated high school. So maybe I'm getting old. Maybe your good friend and host is getting old. I don't feel old. I don't feel tardy. But yeah, this is a young guy. He's an alum, right? He's from Arizona. He was a star quarterback at Shapiro High School. Played at Arizona State. And you know, we'll see how things go, you know. But anyway, it's just so interesting. It's also interesting to me. We'll run through this again here too, you know. kind of dependent on other people's work here. But he coached at Shapiro High School and then became an assistant at Arizona State, then a GA at Memphis. He gets an on-the-field coaching job at Memphis in 17 as a quarterbacks and tight ends coach, becomes the offensive coordinator in 18, goes over to Auburn in 19. Were you expecting that? Yeah, probably not. Offensive coordinator and QB coach. He's there for just the 1 year and then gets the same position at Florida State for 20 and 21. And then 2022, he spent as the OC and quarterback coach at Oregon. So extensively traveled as a coordinator, even though he didn't stay anywhere for very long. And some of that's got to do with coaching changes, right? I mean, that's just, you know, that's how life works in that profession. I mean, you know, it's rent rather than buy, right? More times than not. But he was with Norvell and then left and went and was hired by Gus Malzahn, then goes back with Norvell and then goes to Oregon with Dan Lanning. Now he's got his own gig. But it's tough to kind of figure out, you know, kind of what the template looks like. I mean, there's not a big body of work here to kind of, break down. But the transfer portal's been a big thing for him. But before we get to that, let's talk a little bit about, you know, kind of what things looked like last year. And even though you might not be able to base a lot of guesstimates on that because the returning roster is so much different, you know, so many changes. Maybe you can get an idea on kind of offensive philosophy a little bit. But, they didn't score much. Yeah, 17.75 points a game. It's tough to win Division I football games when you score 17 points a game. And this is a guy with an offensive background. Maybe he just didn't have the horses. They ran for 90 first downs, passed for 110. So pretty good balance in that respect. Net rushing of 16-10. And they threw it for 25-24. So pretty balanced offense on their attack, you know. Attempted 440 passes, and you got to think some of that, too, is likely because you're playing from behind so often. They ran a total of 814 plays last year. And, again, you can kind of do the math yourself. You know, 814 plays and 440 pass attempts. You factor in the sacks, you know, they obviously were a little more pass-heavy. And, again, I think a lot of that's got to do with margin. Special teams wasn't exactly great when it came to kickoff returns, but their kick coverage was very good. Allowed just 16.4 yards a return. That's an impressive statistic. I don't care what your record is. They also only had 15 returns against. When you don't score much, you don't kick off much. Those aren't my rules. Those are nature's rules. That's the way the game works. From a kicking standpoint, punting wise, pretty good. Pretty good. Not. It's like you start thinking about how bad things were for us last year, punting wise, and you're like, there's no way anybody in Power 5 football was worse, but you'd be wrong. Arizona State averaged 35.22 yards a punt. That's the net average. Not great. 11 of 16 in field goals. Had some penalties. Not too terribly bad. 51.83 penalty yardage a game. So in a little bit, almost 10 yards ahead of their opponents. Time possession was pretty much even. Not good on third down, just 31%. Fourth down, however, they were almost 50%, 18 of 38. And when you're a 3-9 team, what do you have to lose? They fumbled the football 12 times. Lost them six. They forced 17 fumbles, but only lost four. Only gained four, excuse me. Think about that. You force 17 fumbles and you only get your hands on four of them. That's tough. 26 sacks against and they had 30. So about the same, but you run the numbers here and just it's not great. Nothing jumps out to you and says, hey, they're really good at this, except maybe it's kickoff return. Look at some individual numbers here, and of course we're going to go over some portal stuff here as well. But Cam Scadabo, you familiar with him? I'm not. I don't think I watched him last year. From Rio Linda, California, 5'10", 225-pound running back. He was a junior last year. Led him in rushing with 797 yards, a net of 788. Nine touchdowns, also a team high there, 65 yards a game. kind of did it by committee, but he was the guy that got the lion's share of the carries. The Carlos Brooks also was a threat for them. Kyson Brown, Jalen Conyers, Trenton Bourquette. So a lot of guys, 20-plus carries. But Scadabo was the guy. All right, passing Trenton Bourquette, we mentioned him. He also was your quarterback, kind of a dual threat guy. Redshirt junior from Tucson, Arizona. You know, it means a lot to him and his family. 151 of 248, but he was one of six people that threw passes on the year. Of their 440 attempts, he had 248 of them, but just four interceptions. So in completion percentage, right at 61%. Played in eight games. You wonder if he didn't miss some due to injury. You know, Jaden Rashada, of course, was expected to be their dude. He now of the big lawsuit against the University of Florida. Very talented guy, but you know, most of the headlines that Jaden Rashada have made so far have had nothing to do with his playing ability. Remember, he was that first big NIL contract that created so much controversy. It's now a matter of the legal system. Leading receiver last year was Elijah Badger. Great name for a receiver. 65 catches, 713 passes, just three touchdowns, which led. So not a lot of touchdown passes as a team, just eight. Let that sink in for a second. Just eight. You threw it 440 times, and you only got it in the end zone eight times. That's pretty tough. It is. So let's look at some portal stuff. Because as we learned, even with Eastern Kentucky, you never know. You just never know, you know, what's going to happen. Let's look at the portal here. They had 29 incoming transfers this year. Malik McCain comes in from Penn State, wide receiver. Big 6'4", 206-pound X-quality receiver. Zach Swanson comes in from Texas on the defensive line. Trying to see if there's some familiar names on here, and there's really not. But it's just kind of a bevy of three stars. It's not a group you look at and say, you know what, hey, this is going to be a difference maker here or there. Some familiar names, I guess, like you remember Roman Petrie? Do you remember that name? Do you? He from University Lab School there in Baton Rouge. Mississippi State was heavily involved with him for a while and ends up going to Purdue. And he's left Purdue and, of course, stayed on him a little bit, kind of sniffed him a little bit out of the portal. But, he's not Arizona State. So we'll get a chance to see what he's all about there. But, that's a name that you probably remember. Well, wasn't exactly a priority target, but nevertheless, a name that you may know. But, there's a lot of guys. LaTerrence Welch, a cornerback from LSU, is headed out there. You got to know if LSU signed him, probably had some raw ability. Things just kind of hadn't worked out quite the way they wanted. Outgoing transfers, they had 30. And maybe that's a good thing, too, because like running the numbers here, so you had Jean Boyd goes to San Jose State. Another kid did not get picked up. George Hart, the third, is headed to Western Kentucky. Mantatui, headed to Arizona. A couple more kids that didn't get picked up. I mean, you know, so it's like there's a handful of these guys that have left and gone on to Power 5 programs, including leading receiver Elijah Badger, who's now at Florida. And, of course, Jaden Rashada, who's now at Georgia. So you work through the numbers here, and you can see it may be a situation where the portal didn't work to their advantage. And you may recall, too, Arizona State had some recruiting violations during COVID and things like that and ended up being sanctioned, and then, you know, Herm Edwards left. And Jordan Clark transferred to Notre Dame. You know, so I would say, just on first blush, right, without watching film, looking at where their transfers ended up by and large, and looking for where they came from coming in, I don't know that you would consider it an upgrade at this point. When you got a bunch of guys leaving, going to other Power 5 programs, especially premium programs in the Southeastern Conference, you begin to kind of ask yourself, you know, what's this thing going to look like? And I don't think we know. you know, that's the thing. They don't know what we're going to look like, and I don't know that we do either, except we've got a year's worth of film to look at. They can go back and look at some Oklahoma stuff and kind of get an idea of maybe Jeff Lebby's tendencies. But we are the second game of the year for them, and they're going to open up at home against Wyoming. Now, the week after they play us, it's a short week. They go to San Marcos, Texas, to play Texas State. So Wyoming week one, and then we're there September 7th. And again, that's 7:30 local time in Tempe. So it's going to be a late night for you. Be prepared for that. And you remember, we went down and won at Arizona, and then we kind of sleptwalked through the LSU game the next week, a game that we still feel like we should have won. It's pretty rare that you get that subdued LSU crowd where they're expecting to lose, but they're going to come to the game anyway because they love LSU. But, man, everybody sat on their hands for basically a half, especially State had the lead, and it's like we could kind of do what we wanted to do, couldn't finish drives, and then, of course, we had the big fumble there, and then that fourth quarter we did nothing, you know. But it's a game you look back and say, I wish we'd had that one back. That game changed on a Mississippi State miscue. This is a different scenario, and I think the fact, too, that, you know, we have the opportunity – you know, to play the game and get back. And I remember the Arizona game, too, we had some problems getting back. But, you know, when you look at Mississippi State's schedule, at least you get a non-conference opponent rather than an SEC opponent the next week. But, you know, Toledo's no joke. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and romanticize them and say, hey, you know, Toledo's got a chance to come in here and beat us. They do, but it's not like playing LSU, right? And so even if we have some issues, we ought to be able to get through that without a lot of trouble. But, yeah, I mean, as we stand today, I'm picking Mississippi State to win this game at Arizona State. And it's so huge for us to win that game because of the fact we really don't have much margin for error when it comes to a bowl game this year. We need to win all four of these non-conference games. And then you got some toss-up games out there. You know, like Florida coming in here, it's like it's so funny. So many people are expecting them to be pitiful again, and that Billy Napier will be fired at year's end. But then you're expecting them to go on the road and win in an SEC venue. That's not something that's been, you know, something that's happened with great regularity at Florida here as of late. And we can do the math together. I mean, you know, Billy Napier has been at Florida for 2 years. We go back to the 2022 season when they went 6-7 and 3-5 in the SEC. All right, so the first road game of that year was at Tennessee. They got beat by 5. That's a loss, right? The next road game, I guess technically it's a neutral site game. They played Georgia. They got beat. They did manage to go to A&M back in year one when Jim Bono's guys were a mess. They get a dub there. And then they go to Vanderbilt and lose. So in year one, road games, they win one. One road game. We'll flash over to 2023. Last year, another season of discontent in Gainesville. They go 5-7. You go on the road against Utah and you lose. You go to Lexington and you lose. You do manage to get a win at South Carolina. You go to LSU, you lose. You go to Missouri, you lose. You go to Florida State, you lose. So they have won two road games in two seasons. But the SEC football media is expecting me to believe that they're going to come in here and win that ball game. And why? And what evidence is there to support that? Mississippi State's won more games than they have the last 2 years. And so you begin to kind of do the numbers here. It's like, hey, this is a true toss-up game. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. But you get excited about it, and it's like that's a helmet sticker prediction. There's no thought or effort into it whatsoever. I think we can be fair about that. I mean, you begin to think about this Florida team. You know, I don't know what to expect, but I know that Scott Strickland's probably got a big decision to make. Not to mention, when Florida comes in here, we're going to talk about Florida more in a couple shows, but they get Miami in week one, then they get Samford, then they get Texas A&M, and then they go to Mississippi State. So three consecutive home games, two of those against Power 5 opponents And so it's not like they're going to be able to be vanilla in those ball games, and all of a sudden we're just holding some things back and have some opponent-specific plays. They're going to, you know, change the playbook there. I think Florida's in trouble when they come in here. That's just my feeling. But you know, back to our point is that our margin for error this year is not very good. Now, I still believe there's probably an upset in there. We'll probably upset somebody. It may not feel like an upset. There's probably an upset in there, too, somewhere along the way. But I think there's a real good chance the state's 4-0. Now, the rest of the year, different deal, right? I'm not going to sit here and say, hey, we're going to the Rose Bowl again. But, yeah, you can get 4-0. I think you can. I think if you're Mississippi State, you got to take it a week at a time, obviously. But I think you begin to think about this. Eastern Kentucky, your FCS opponent, you go to Arizona State team that went 3-9 last year and it's completely rebuilt. And we have a ton of new players too, don't get me wrong. We're basically a brand new team in many respects. But yeah, I think you can go out there and get that game. And you know, that might even be the bigger surprise than beating Florida. You say, but Steve, it's Florida. But it's at home. Going on a road, winning in the Power Five, and you know, that's, you know, Arizona was the first of those Power Five home and home mandates that we've swept. Maybe you didn't realize that. But you know, I think we can go out there and get the dub. And again, a lot of that too is because you know, the quality of the opponent. Should you beat Toledo? Yeah. Yeah. And if we don't, it's going to be a really long year. And then again, the toss-up game at 11 a.m. Need you to be here. We're going to get plenty of evening football in the month of August and first part of September. But going to be 11 a.m. September 21st. Hopefully, we get a little cool snap coming in here. We're going to need you to be here loud and proud. Because after that, we got road trips to Texas and Georgia. And then you get some toss-up games coming in. A&M, Arkansas. And I don't know what to expect from A&M. I don't think they do either. And then as UMass, then we got to go to Knoxville. It's going to be tough. Missouri comes in. That's going to be tough, too. Then you got to go to Ole Miss. And so you start running the numbers here, and it really, really emphasizes how important that game against Arizona State is. If we're going to make a bowl game, you got to probably win the 4-9 conference and knock off Florida and Arkansas. That's probably doable and probably your best course. Because when you start thinking about, you know, all of our difficult road games, all of our difficult games are on the road. Our toss-up games are at home. And I still feel like there's probably an upset out there. That's why I'm still open to the possibility of 7-5. But, you know, 6 wins, 7 wins, I think would be outstanding considering, you know, the changes. But, you know, you got a veteran quarterback. You got a veteran play caller who's brought in his people around him. You know, and so, yeah, I think offensively we'll be playing better as the year goes on. But I'm glad you get the FCS opponent. But I think we are a team capable of going out there and getting that dub against Arizona State. I think you guys believe that too. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Look, if you're bringing a large group or you'd love to get everybody together, look no further than the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. 5 bedrooms, 2 baths, just neatly tucked away about 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. If you're coming for a ballgame weekend, you can do your tailgating right there on the property. You don't have to worry about lugging all that stuff back and forth to campus or worrying about some of your stuff walking off. That's a great, great, great benefit. Or maybe it's not even about game day. Maybe you just want to get everybody together. You know, we've got about a little over a month to go. Maybe you want to get in there for one weekend, like a back-to-school weekend. Maybe get all the cousins together, right? Maybe get the girls together, a couple's weekend together, you know. You know, so that's the thing that has to be considered too, right? It's not always about the kids. Even though it's so great to get the kids together, sometimes you need a break. Maybe drop the kids off with grandma and grandpa, and then you guys have a couple's weekend or a guy's weekend or a girl's weekend, you know, before football gets here. Yeah, guys, I tell you what, you know, we take a lot of football trips. Sometimes the wife doesn't come with us. Maybe, just maybe, maybe a girl's weekend. Maybe you should suggest that. It's like, hey, why don't you get all your college friends together? You guys stay here. You know, you can order in. You can have the full-service kitchen if you want to cook. If you don't want to cook, that's cool too. Maybe get you, I don't know, get you a case of wine and everybody sit down and just kind of get caught up. Sounds like a great idea to me. Now, when you Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, their Facebook page is going to auto-populate so you can peruse through the pictures and see the amenities that are available to you when you stay there. Also, you're going to have some booking options. You're going to have Airbnb and VRBO, and you're welcome to use those. It's a free country. But if you want to save some money, I can help you with that. Book through the Evolve website and use promo code BSR10, BSR10, and get 10% off your stay. How about that? Right? Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to bring a large group to town in the Golden Triangle. All right, before we get out of here, I want to frame up a little bit more on this Mershon thing. I've gotten some text messages back while I've been recording, and every so often I'll pause the show. You may have heard. I'll pause the show, have to take dogs out, take a phone call, whatever. So we talk about this Ryan Prager thing. So even if they, like, even if he doesn't sign, his money is charged against the bonus pool. That is Rule 4 of the Major League Baseball draft under the current collective bargaining agreement that runs from 22 to 26. Any top 10 pick, anybody selected in top 10 rounds, if you don't sign them, you lose that slot value. Now, that doesn't really help us, though. If he doesn't sign, they can still use what's left, which is about $300,000. So then they could take that $300,000 and couple that with that $150,000 slot and tell Dave Mershon, okay, here's $450,000. And again, I think he would sign for that. And so it's in the Angels and Mississippi State's best interest that Ryan Prager signs for slot or above slot. We are really rooting, because we're Mississippi State people, we want Dave Mershon back, right? And it's one thing, too, like, you don't always know what to root for, right? Like, what's, you know, I want what's best for the kid. And you do want that. But you'd love to see him back in maroon and white. You would. And here's my thing, too. It's not just that it makes us a better club. I think Dave Mershon's better than $354,000. I think he's better than that. And I think he can come back, maybe get an NIL deal, and then maybe go get himself $500,000 next year. He's a draft-eligible sophomore. He's got 2 years of leverage to work with. And so that's, again, I never thought we'd be in this position. Like, once we got through, you know, round 15 or so, I thought, we're probably okay. But, you know, here we are, and it's still a concern. You know, I'd like to be able to sit here and tell you, hey, yeah, this is – it's all going to be okay. I'd love to be able to give you some definitive information one way or another, but I can't. And I am told that Mershon is going to fly out and meet with the Angels tomorrow. And so I think we'll have some resolution by the time we get together on Friday. But, again, it's kind of a hint and a half for you. If Prager goes above slot, I think in many respects it probably eliminates a good bit of the probability of Dave Mershon signing. Now, if he doesn't sign, and all of a sudden they got $300,000 to work with and they can pay him $450,000, I think he's going to sign. And so, again, there's just a lot of variables involved here. Now, Dane Burns, that's another guy we've talked about. You know, Dane got picked up, too, you know, in the 17th round. But you know, he's working through the process, too, but I do believe he is going to come to school. This is a guy that hadn't pitched much the last couple of years. You know, his games this summer have been like the first baseball he's thrown, you know, 18 months or so. And so the fact that he could go out there and just throw in a summer league and then find himself drafted says a lot about his raw and natural ability. But I do believe that he is going to be a part of our baseball program. You know, he had the gap year, you know, because of the injury and things of that nature. And so, but that's we hadn't talked about him much. But in my conversations with him, he's kind of saying the right things. He's like, well, I want to wait it out and kind of see how things go. But he also told me some other things, too, to make me feel like that, hey, he kind of sees the bigger picture here. It's like, yeah, I could probably sign for $150,000 or $200,000. And you know what? If it was your child and maybe you had that decision to make, maybe you take that. He's like, hey, especially after the injury. But his dad, pro hockey player, kind of understands how things work. He understands, too, he can come in here and pitch for 2 years, and if he has a really, really good second year that we expect, and all of a sudden, you know, that $200,000 may turn into, you know, $1 million. Those are the things that are important. That's one of the things that's so incredibly important. And back in Marsan just a second. Again, information's kind of coming to me, you know, as we're going here, and I want to give you the latest information. One of the things that I didn't calculate is you lose the 5% overage associated with your pick. Like they give you a little room to go over your bonus pool. And so if that's the case, then it's not just the slot value that is charged against the bonus pool. It's that 5% overage too. And so that's very, very significant. Very, very significant. And we're sitting here. I've got, you know, people telling me that, you know, he is going to sign or he's not going to sign, you know, whatever. But, you know, we'll see how that goes. You know, it's just going to be a matter of, you know, they just got somebody that shared a text with me of a guy that covers the Angels. A guy by the name of Taylor Blake Ward covers the Angels in the MLB draft. Managing editor of baseball coverage for the Sporting Tribune. So looks like he has some credentials here. And he says that Prager is going to sign. Doesn't venture a guess at what the signing bonus will be. But if you're David Mershon and you want to sign, you want Ryan Prager to go under slot. If you're a Mississippi State fan and you want him to come back, you want Prager to go over slot or at least get slot. I think I have one Major League Baseball scout friend that tells me he expects that they're not going to have anything left to offer David Mershon over the $150,000 allotment for his spot. Now, that doesn't mean that David Mershon won't sign. I don't think he'll sign for that, and I think he shouldn't sign for that, but he didn't text me and say, hey, Steve, what do you think? I just don't think that's going to be enough to get him. Because like you can get that $150,000 next year. So you don't really gain anything. Right? So if they're willing to give you $400,000 now, okay, maybe you sign. If they're not, and they're only going to give you the $150,000, then you owe it to yourself, in my opinion, you owe it to yourself to come back, prove them wrong, and then get more money next year. And even if you don't, you at least bet on yourself and gave yourself a second chance to exceed the $150,000. So it's incredible how much we've talked about this. But again, I think it really speaks to what Dave Mershon means to Mississippi State baseball. You get Mershon, you know, all of a sudden maybe you don't need another bat at the portal. And there's not a player anywhere close to David Mershon's ability in the portal outside of maybe Aviar Cat, you know, a guy from Washington. But he's not coming here if Mershon's coming back. You know, so if you get Mershon, you probably don't make that move. I know other people are saying, Steve, we get as much talent as we can, we figure it out. I absolutely agree. But with this new thing out there about we're going to have to get down to 34 guys on the roster, that's one less conversation you got to have, right? I mean, we got to do what's best for Mississippi State baseball. And I think that we're going to have a really, really good club next year. And if we get Mershon and Smith back, you know, Mershon back and Smith in, I think a lot of people would say, you know what, this Mississippi State team is probably a top 10 team next year. You know, we finished the top 20 this year. And people would say, but Steve, that's not up to our standards. I think sometimes we romanticize the standards. And listen, I want to get back to Omaha. And I'll tell anybody to listen, I want to win the NAFL championship. I want to win the NAFL championship in 2025. Not just some pie in the sky, but well, one day. No, I want to win an AFL championship next year. And my hope is that everybody affiliated with Mississippi State baseball feels the same. Now, if we don't win the AFL championship, I'm not going to be disappointed and rioting in the streets. But I think we have to attack our roster management with that in mind. Not, hey, this makes us better. No, what gets us to Omaha? What makes us a national championship contender? You know, we hadn't been to Omaha since 2021. I'm ready to go back. And, you know, then it all boils down to matchups, right? And I think this lineup, when you see what we've done in the portal, and most of those guys are here. You know, they're not enrolled in classes yet, but they're here. You know, they're coming down here, getting settled, and picking out apartments and things like that. You know, these guys are committed and ready to go. And a lot of people worried, hey, what about Reed Stallman with Hunter Hines coming back? You know, what does that mean? Well, you know, Reed Stallman's a guy that can play multiple positions for you. But when you think about what this lineup should be offensively, got a chance to be really good. And it's so interesting. We're only acutely aware of what happens in Starkville, but I don't know if you have kind of checked it out. But there's not a lot of teams in the Southeastern Conference that are going to be old this year. You know, and you need some old, right? You need some mature veteran type guys. But there's not a lot of teams you look at and say, well, you know, we thought about Arkansas last year. This time last year, we were all talking about, hey, Arkansas's got all the pitching in the portal. Arkansas's got a veteran lineup. It wasn't exactly as offensive as they wanted it to be, didn't prove to be. But a lot of people thought, hey, Arkansas may have a chance to win the whole thing. I was one of them. And then what do you know? Brady Tigard, not quite 100%. Love the kid. Happy he got an opportunity to get pro ball, right? Mason Molina goes up there and puts on 40 pounds of bad weight. He gets drafted. Happy for him, too. But I don't think you can look back now and say, hey, that Arkansas pitching staff was great. A lot of people thought they would be elite. Mason Smith was. You know, Mississippi State should have beat him, right? We had a great plan. Ran his pitch count up, got him out of the game. Just couldn't finish, you know. But you go back and think, you know, we knew 2 years ago when LSU got Paul Skeens that he was a difference maker. And you go back and look at those pitching numbers and you ask yourself, where in the world would they have been without Paul Skeens? Well, they'd have been at home. That's where they'd been. There's not a Paul Skeens in the portal, and there will probably never be another Paul Skeens in the portal. This is a guy, in less than a year's time, he wins an AFL championships and then starts the All-Star game. First pick in the draft. That's probably never going to happen again. You know, and I think, you know, some of the mistakes that we've made at times too, you know, we get really invested. And I think one of the things we've done a really good job of this year is we haven't put all of our eggs in one basket. You know, it's like we were all in with Paul Skeens and then we didn't get him and we didn't have really a pivot there. You know, last year we did, right? We didn't get Luke Holman, but we were able to pivot and go get Cal Steven. This year, I think we've gone through the portal. It's like, oh, we didn't get this guy. Oh, then we get this guy. Yeah. And so I think as we have kind of matured in the portal era as a staff, we're kind of understanding we got to recruit a lot of kids for just a few spots. You know, and these guys, you bring them in for visits and you kind of push and push and push. And not everybody that we brought in for a visit that we push for a commitment. You'd say, but Steve, you know, well, you know, they're filling us out. We're filling them out too. We're not desperate. We don't have to take a commitment from everybody that wants to come play here. There are some guys out there that we obviously missed on. But it's so incredible. I go back and think about, you know, the discussions that we had a week after the portal opened. You know, people were like, oh, we're getting crushed in the portal. We absolutely did not get crushed in the portal. And there are just some people out there that, you know, they have developed such a negative opinion of Mississippi State baseball that anything that happens, we find a way to, you know, to gripe about it, even if we're not factually correct. You know, I've had people come to my message board and they've read in Facebook groups or, you know, other sites or whatever, and they come out and say, hey, well, we missed on this kid, and it'll be a kid we didn't even bring in for a visit. Now, there was one guy in particular, I won't mention the name, one guy in particular talked to one of the guys, one of the advisors, and he says, hey, Mississippi State called to fill the kid out, but he already had his decision made. He knew where he was going before he went in the portal. But because somebody else on a social media site says, hey, our coaches followed this kid on Twitter, we must really want him. It might have been a situation where we're just trying to get his phone number. And so this kid already knew where he wanted to go. He goes in the portal 2 days later. He's announcing his commitment, and then we paint it as a miss. Doesn't make a lot of sense. Yeah, I mean, thousands of players are in the portal. You know, and you put your list together. You know, you work on it in anticipation. You know, you start hearing some chatter out there, and everybody does. So-and-so may go in the portal, you do your evaluation, you put a board together. Then they go in the portal and you start contacting people. It doesn't mean that we missed on all those kids. You're like, oh, well, you know, we're Mississippi State. Hey, listen, that branding means something to me too. But I think it's also important to have some context around it. You know, hey, did we get beat on Michael Ross? We did. He got drafted too. I'm not sure if he's signing, but we did. We get beat on Kyle Jones? Yeah, we did. We did. We get beat on Zach Roop? Yeah, we did. You know, it's like, you know, so many of those, it ends up being, you know, states in the final two or three. You don't get any points for that. But I think it's important to have some context for all this stuff. For so many people that get so bent out of shape, and it's like, oh, I read this name on a message board, and everybody else seems to like him. Well, why didn't he come here? Well, we might not have even recruited him. We may not have offered him a scholarship. We may not have invited him in for a visit. But then we want to go out there and say, well, I can't. We're getting beat in the portal. No, we're not getting beat in the portal. You just don't understand what's going on. And so, again, we're going to win some, we're going to lose some. But I think it's important to understand, too, that at least one SEC school, and in most situations, three or four other SEC schools, got beat in the portal when we took a kid. It's funny how that works. We never tell that side of the story, right? Hey, let me get ready to get out of here. I'm going to go float here in a little bit. You should come float, too. Matter of fact, I'll be running the float spot this weekend. So, nevertheless, you should come float with us, 662-268-7601. And it's not just like floating in your pool, right? You get to float in a pod that you can turn the lights out if you want to. You don't want to, you don't have to. It's a soft light in there if you just kind of want to have that on. If you want the doors open, you can have them on. But the reality of it is that it does so much for my aches and pains and my anxiety. And maybe it could help you too. And so now's a good time to come. You know, summertime, we're steady. We're not slammed like we were at the end of the spring. There were some days we're having, you know, 22 floats a day. So, yeah, you can kind of get in there now. And I know the weekend's starting to book up. But call 662-268-7601. Or you can download the TrueRest app and just book online. Yeah, that's super cool. You don't have to have any human interaction. But if you do have your first float, we ask that you get there 30 minutes early so we can have you watch kind of the introductory video and kind of get you settled and prepared for all that. But, yeah, it's been great, man. And, man, been open for over 5 months now. And I want to thank all of our members and the people that come and see us frequently. A lot of student-athletes come or are a part of that thing, too. So, again, if you've got chronic aches and pains or anxiety and stress in your life, and chances are you do, we may have a remedy to kind of help you deal with some of that stuff. So come be a part of it. A TrueRest Float Spa of Starkville. Let's get out of here. I'll see you guys on Friday. I'll actually record the Friday night show on Thursday, our Friday show on Thursday night. So when you get up Friday morning, you'll have your boneyard fixed. But until then, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.